This is Forrest Elise interviewing for the Creative Push Project on December 18th. It's the 18th, yeah. At 11:45. So can you state your name and age?
Okay. My name is Peg Freisinger, and I'm 50.
Great. So go ahead and maybe start kind of like, introduce what you were talking about.
Okay. All right. I was speaking about my walk in this life with something called anthroposophical medicine and the use of biography as a method to know oneself, as a method to look at places in one life where we come to a threshold, we meet a rite of initiation, a transformative time in our life. And if you look in ancient cultures, men often had some sort of rite of initiation, a passageway. Often it was around puberty where they were coming into manhood, right? And they were sent off to kill the lion or whatever it is. And that women in these cultures, we in a way have a rite of passage built in. If we have the opportunity to give birth, it truly can be a rite of initiation, a moment where you're brought to a threshold, a completely transformative event, where you really have to venture into the unknown, not knowing what is going to come to pass, and to have courage and to go within to know that you have the strength that you need to get through the process, whatever way it's going to look, and wherever you decide to do it, and even as women, if we say we want to have a child and for some reason we cannot conceive, that too. Is another threshold moment. So in anthroposophical medicine, looking at biography, we look at these aspects. Oh, I'm sorry. I think that's my phone.
That's okay. We'll just pause.
I'm gonna turn it off there. That human lives have far more similarities than we realize, and these moments of these passageways, these initiations can look like many different things. It can look like a health crisis. It can look like a husband leaving a wife. It can look, there's many different ways, but we all are going to meet them, and all of them are opportunities to grow and to love, deepen the love and to learn about oneself. And so in a broader perspective, birth is a very powerful mode of initiation.
Excellent. I'm going to cough. That has been something that we've really keyed in on, is this idea of transformation and how, and self-discovery, and how women will oftentimes say they found this strength they didn't know they had, or their character was built really upon that birth experience.
Yes.
And they had to, because oftentimes we're up against a lot of opinions, from others, that it helps
and
you
judgment.
Define what your opinion is and to solidify your ideas and perspectives.
Yes, absolutely. I tell, I walk with people, like I'm human too. I'm walking in this, and that we don't really learn anything when everything's going great. It is through the struggle. It is through hard times. And not that it's not possible. It is possible to learn through joy. Absolutely. But big transformative pieces usually come with some sort of pain. So on an emotional level, on a physical level, and how do we transform that? I have this quote that I have on my email, and it says something like, "The road to wholeness is not always pretty, and it doesn't always feel good, but it's always worth the journey." So it's along those lines.
So what about your birth journey? How did that begin?
All right. Well, at the time I was working in labor and delivery as a nurse, and had actually plans to go to graduate school and become a certified nurse midwife. And so I thought, it's like I was in school. It made sense to actually go work in that area. So I was working first as a student and then as a graduate. And what I realized, actually, being in there. And I worked in a beautiful place for birth. We had what we call LDRPs, their labor, delivery, recovery, postpartum. The baby was never taken from the mom unless there was really a need to. Most of the deliveries were done by midwives. They always had a doctor on call, and they, you know, there was an operating room there if need be, but it was a very low-risk hospital. We just did, I think it, they referred to it as level one nursery, so only babies 36 weeks gestation and beyond. So nothing was high risk. And we had deep, big tubs for the women to get into, and big rooms. I mean, some of them were as big as this hotel room, where they would be in as many families people wanted in the room were allowed. So as far as hospital goes, births go, it was a very beautiful environment. But even that, when I got into it, I realized pretty quickly that I didn't know that that was going to be my path, at least to do, even though it was a really beautiful thing. I mean, I learned about myself, and, you know, even though it was this great environment that, you know, they could pretty much do what they wanted. And if you, I mean, depending on your nurse and your midwife, and like I was personally pretty low risk. I wanted them off the monitor. So if they needed to be monitored, I just kind of listen and wanted them moving and, you know, whatever they needed to do. And it varied. I mean, some, you know, it just depended. But again, it was a great place. But what I learned was that just women coming in that door and taking their own clothes off and putting on this hospital gown was a method of relinquishing their power. And I believe very deeply that women, all women should give birth wherever they feel most comfortable. I don't feel there's any right or wrong. And if the culture has taught, and I believe it is a cultural thing, that, you know, like birth, that a hospital is the best place to have a birth, that's where they better be. Because if they're not, they're going to go against what they believe. And it's you know, so you got to follow your heart. You got to be honest of mind and sincere of heart, right? And know where you are in it. So anyway, I'm really digressing. So I learned in working through there that I really didn't want even a hospital, I mean, even a birth there. And I knew all the midwives and all the nurses, and it was, I mean, I could have exactly what I wanted. But I really wanted to be at home. And my husband, who didn't really think about this, he's like, no way. Of course, he came from a very conservative family, you know, had a very different background, and was very much, I'm more alternative. I want to do everything naturally and herbally. And he is very much like, throw an antibiotic at everything. You know, it's like Miss, you know, vegan raw met Mr. Hostess Twinkie eating meat guy, right? I mean, we were polarity. And he was really like, no way, it's too dangerous. And so I was like, okay, I have this beautiful community. I can give birth there. You know, it's like, it won't be exactly what I want, but he'll be comfortable. And we need both of us to be comfortable. So I decided to go into the hospital until we went into some birthing classes in the last trimester. And it was the midwife I knew her through the community. Very good. She wrote a book. Her name's Pam England. She wrote Birthing from Within. Beautiful, beautiful book. And beautiful midwife. And through the discussions, she was saying, you know, she's showing the risks of birth at home versus at, and he's like, is this right? I'm like, yes, it is right. And so what I didn't realize is that, you know, when you had a really hard day and you came home and you would vent on basically the train wrecks, that's pretty much all he was hearing about birth. And so then we had to have the conversation, well, how much of that train wreck had to do with the fact that they were in the hospital and having to be monitored? And, you know, in this, you know, it's like there's, I mean, that's not the only piece, but we really got into deep discussion, and he came totally full circle and said, okay, let's do a home birth. So I said, okay, great. So, so we had, it was Pam, who was the midwife, and she had two of us in labor at the exact same time. And we were about 45 minutes away, drive time. So in early labor, she kind of went back and forth, you know, as we were, my water broke. I don't remember, sometime in the day, and I still wasn't in labor at night, and I remember we went to see this awful movie, and I thought, why did I do that? But I did, just to get in my mind, just a mindless movie, but it was so bad, I was like, this is like counterproductive, that's for sure. Anyway, so we went home, and it was, you know, the sun had gone down, this was September, and I thought, well, we should probably get things going, because I think at that point it had been almost 12 hours since my water broke. And so I started doing nipple stim to get things going. And the other girl kind of had very similar story, same thing, and started doing nipple stim. We went into labor and got into active labor about the same time. And she had an apprentice. So I think I started a good labor around 10 that night. And I think by about 2, realized that we were both kind of neck and neck. And so the apprentice came to my house. And then I had birthing midwives. One was coming to, I had friends that were midwives, and one was coming to take photos. And so she was going to be there. So I was like, I've got, it's like, it makes sense for them to come here and you stay there. Well, that was the decision that was made. I was in labor. I was like, but I do remember peripherally trying to being somewhere part of that. Like, yeah, just have Vicky come and we're good. So I did pretty well. And then, transition, it's always like, whoa, okay, yeah, I don't know that I can do this anymore, that moment of, wow, this is, it's all powerful, where you really have to kind of dig in, and then made it through that and started pushing, which actually for me was even more intense than transition, because I kept getting rectal spasms. Every time I'd have a contraction, my rectum would seize, and I had an irritable bowel when I was in college, and so I'd had this happen before. And it's pretty incapacitating. So I had that going on along with the labor every time. And I thought, I don't know. It's like, first babies take a while. And I knew I'd been doing it for a while. And I finally was like, I don't know how much longer I can do this. I really don't. And actually, trying to think back. No. When I was in transition and it got really bad, I was like, I don't know how much I can take of it that at that point. And I asked them to check them, and they said, you're basically complete. So I'm like, okay, I can do this. It's like, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then the spasm started, and then I did that for a couple hours and thought, okay, I don't know if I can do this any much longer. And that I voiced internally. I didn't actually say. But as, it's like you can see, as you start to make progress and the baby starts to move down, and then you can actually see. I remember holding a mirror there so I could see, the process, which just, told me it's not going to last forever, because you just get in that space where all time is, it's like there's no time. And like a lot of women, you go back to your coaching. You just take it one at a time. You don't think about the next 20, just the next one, and rest until then. It's like it's just one at a time. So made it through. When she was born, I remember there was just such a sense of relief, that the pain had stopped. And I remember them just scooping down and, handing her to me. And there's this picture of me holding her at that moment with this big smile on my face. But my feeling honestly was, I don't think I was quite ready to hold her. I was just so relieved to not be in so much pain. I just needed a moment to kind of come back into myself. I don't know what it was, but I remember looking at that picture and that big smile. I'm like, that was just relief that I made it through it. That's all. It wasn't that I was so happy to be holding this baby. Not yet. That came, in 10 minutes, but I just needed a minute. Let's see. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Interrupt to ask some details. So, I also want you to talk about the being pregnant part.
Okay.
Were you working? Were you, how were you handling the actual pregnancy part?
Okay.
And then, to bring it back to the birth experience, what sort of coping mechanisms did you use? Done Lamaze or hypnobirthing or any of that type of stuff? Or was it just based on, your inner strength, that kind of a question. And then the positionings, being able to move around, that kind of stuff.
Okay, all right. So the first question, which I've already...
is about the pregnancy.
The pregnancy. So I had a very uneventful pregnancy, very healthy. I gained 30, 35 pounds. I love to eat. So I gained a lot. I remember my husband telling me, I really didn't eat much meat, but when I got pregnant, I wanted to eat it every night. I just wanted a steak every night. I remember him looking at me and going, oh my gosh, now if your taste in movies would change, you'd be perfect. So I do remember, my diet changed. I didn't have much morning sickness. I felt pretty much really tired in the beginning. and then felt pretty good and worked until, like, you know, 3 or 4 days before I gave birth. I remember thinking, I'll take a week off. You know, babies are usually, you know, first baby's usually a little later. So, yeah, I worked right to the very end. And I did a lot of, I was training someone. I was precepting a new nurse. And so when she was in and she was, you know, she got further along in my pregnancy, she was pretty much independent. So I remember I'd sit in the corner of somebody else birthing and just squat, you know, just train to be in that position. I'd sit against the wall and just be in a squatting position, which really came to serve me very well because it was the only position really I could tolerate when I was pushing. And to hold yourself for 3 hours in that position, you know, I pushed for 3 hours. And it really, we tried all other kinds of positions because I'd get so tired. But I always, it's like, I need to be squatting. I need to open things up as much as possible. It was not an easy push to get her out. You know, it's like, I think the pelvis and everything, it kind of met its, you know, the passenger, the pelvis and the push effort. And I was strong. I'm very physically strong. So there was no problem with the effort. It really was the, you know, her head and the size of the pelvis. So,
was she a big baby?
No, she was like 8'4", you know, but we're all different on the inside. So, and what else about the pregnancy?
Did you swell?
Not too much, you know, a little towards the very end. I mean, for the amount of time I spent on my feet and walking, and I remember a doctor, and I was like weeks away from my due date, and he's like, you have got, I just like bolt out of a delivery to get something, right, as if I didn't have this big belly. He's like, you've got to slow down, you know. It's like, it didn't, there was no, I don't remember waddling, I don't remember, I just, you know, it's like, I just, yeah, it was pretty strong force. And so, and I never did slow down. I didn't, but I did have to push against all those muscles that have so much strength, you know. It's like, I had strong muscles pushing, but I also had strong muscles in my pelvic floor that, yeah, had to yield, right? It's like, it's both. You've got to have power, but you also have to surrender. And so that first birth was a big surrender process.
How did he, how did he perform?
My husband, beautifully. I think he was traumatized by how long it took, especially the pushing phase, because he, you know, it's like on TV, they push 3 times and they're done. And yeah, so it was hard. That was hard on him. I remember in early labor, I had this image, like, I wanted these candles everywhere. It's like all this, and I was sitting on this big birthing ball, and things were starting to kind of get more intense, and I was going into active labor, and I remember I had to throw up, you know, as I started, you know, like, things were really starting to move. So I'm like, I need to throw up. And he went, got the garbage can. Then all of a sudden I'm like, these candles smell horrible. Would you please, get them out of here. So we went and blew around out, like, the 30 candles, not thinking that all the smoke coming up, right? So then I'm like, get the smoke. I was like, outside, put the candles outside. You know, it's funny how it is one of those times where you can do nothing extra, and even just smelling something is an assault, feels like an assault on your system. It's not, it's just one more thing that you know, we're gonna,
you're not the process person to say that. It's so funny because people were saying they thought they'd want a certain kind of music and all of the stuff, and they're like, I couldn't have any other sensory thing.
Yes, it's like, just shut up and let me do what I need to do. And even the midwife's wanting to touch, it's like, don't touch me. Even at the very end, when she was wanting to kind of, you know, rub my perineum, and I'm like, don't touch me. And she went to, like, you know, try to help the head, like, ease it out. And I had an instant pain. I'm like, no, like, hands off. Don't do it. It just was like, my body knew the exact, like, amount of pressure that it could handle. You know, it was like everything was just so fine-tuned into what I could handle, I guess you could say, or what I could meet. And anything extra, yeah, it was that. It was just, like, too much. Or it put me over the edge where I couldn't hold my space. And so then in preparing for labor, we did the, I think it was a version of Lamaze. And I do remember getting to a point in labor going, I was not breathing. And I think I was in the tub. I'd gotten in the, so things started to heat up, and I got in the tub. I'm like, I think I need to get in the tub. And I could feel everything just relax, like, oh, the weight off me. And then the contractions just came like a vengeance, just like, yes, you know, it was a surrender. The water allowed me to surrender a bit. So then the labor just came in like, that's what we needed. Like, this is it. So then it came so fast, I literally stopped breathing. And I remember thinking, you know, those what we talked about in class, like, oh yeah, you've got to keep breathing. And so I brought in the breath just as a method to, well, it was just, I was really to keep breathing. You know, it's like, it's so intense, you just stop everything. And I don't know that it, I think I, it does help. It did help. You know, it did help. And that, well, it's good to keep oxygen flowing, right? Yes. And it also, that movement is a yielding in itself. You know, it's not a seizing. It is a movement. It's being a flow. So, yeah, I think those were the two. We didn't have a birth tub for her. Ended up giving birth squatting in the bedroom with the mirror. I remember the mirror and the light. I wanted to see. Yeah.
So, you're going to not be able to play with that, by the way.
Oh, sorry about that.
If you need to take a drink, take a drink.
Okay, thank you.
So, did you... So, after you had that minute, obviously they put her on your chest, but then I assume they, you know, took her away and cleaned her off or did whatnot. Did you start nursing? Tell me about that afterwards.
So, they handed to me to her immediately, and I was squatting. So, I just took her into my arms and things settled down and they put a chucks under me or already had a chucks on me. And I just kind of leaned against the bed and got out of that squatting position, which was a relief because I'd been there for quite a while. And I just held her for a while. Did put her to breast. It was like within 10 or 15 minutes when she was starting to show she was ready, you know, and starting to root around and had no problems latching on and was a great eater from the get-go. One of the struggles postpartum, if you do postpartum, I ended up having postpartum depression, and it was all actually centering around nursing issues, breastfeeding. I knew I was going back to work at 3 months, and the midwives were like, you know, some babies really have a hard time with this nipple confusion. You know you're going back to work. That when you introduce a nipple really early, they tend to go back and forth easier. You know, they can. And what actually happened was she took the bottle really easily, and then she didn't want to breastfeed. And then she didn't want to breastfeed. And so then my milk, and there was a combination of factors. It was introducing the bottle, and we did it at night. So when my milk production was the lowest, we'd give her the bottle at night, but then she'd sleep all night long. She had her stomach full, so then I get completely engorged, right, which is not the right thing when you're trying to develop a milk supply. So then she'd do okay during the day, you know, but the more she had the bottle, the more she would fuss and with the breast. And so I ended up, my milk production took a tank. And it was also compounded by a trip. My brother got married in California, so I'm traveling with her at 3 weeks old. You know, it's like, and you want to go in. I just didn't honor that I should have stayed home and just been with her. But, you know, it is what it is. So ended up having to use the SMS, or I can't remember what it was, but it was a little tube that you put on your breast to try to stimulate the milk supply. It was just became this big, like, huge fiasco. She was such a great feeder, and it really created just this big mess. And over it, really, then the formula started to get her constipated, so then she had all kinds of gut issues that it just was like kind of one thing after the other until I found myself crying all day. And I went into a postpartum appointment, I think when she was like 4 months old, and I just started crying. He's like, have you been crying a lot? I'm like, yeah, I've been crying a lot. And he's like, are you depressed? And you know, it's like, you never see it in yourself. I'm like, no, I don't think so. And actually, it could have been the second month appointment, I don't remember. But I was really depressed. I got to the point where I thought that both the baby and my husband deserve better, and I actually had a plan. Like, I was going to check out. I was really depressed. Like, I was not thinking rationally at all. And when she was about 4 or 6 months old, somewhere in there, she started eating food. And then really didn't want to nurse. So I remember I'd come home from work and try to latch her on the breast when she was sleeping, and she'd wake up and just be pissed. And at every step, I just get sadder and sadder and sadder. I wanted to breastfeed her, and I just felt so bad, and we had all these gut issues, and it's just like one thing after the other. But she finally just, she finally stopped, and I can't remember if she was four, I think she was 6 months old, where she just was like, will not do it anymore. And that was about my lowest emotionally, where I was like, I'm leaving. And she saved my life by stopping, because my hormones shifted in a huge way, and I pulled out of that postpartum depression very quickly, and then could look back and go, oh my gosh, I was going to kill myself, you know? So yeah, I do believe that there was a bigger process at play, and she at a soul level knew exactly what she needed to do to help me. And she did. Yeah. Still hard. I still wanted her to, you know, have that milk. And her gut is messed up to this day. And again, you know, we all have things that we're going to have to meet. And this was part of a bigger plan. You know, like we think that, you know, we're just supposed to meet happiness and all these good things. And these gut issues that she is facing that play out in many different ways in her life are part of something that she is to transform. You know, it's like, I believe that she came with that plan. She is, you know, it's like we're co-creating this process. She was wanting that for her own growth and development. I was wanting the postpartum depression experience for my own growth and development. It was all part of a bigger scheme.
Did they not have the pump available to you?
They did, but I didn't have much luck pumping. I didn't have much luck, you know, expressing, even though I had plenty of milk in there. And I think it was just because at that point I became so anxious about everything. So it was totally a stress thing. You know, it's like everything became like, and I have a pretty strong stress response. You know, it's like, And so I believe it was actually my mental, emotional that was further compounding, you know, not being able to express the milk even though it was there. And because she gained weight beautifully until we started the bottle. You know, it wasn't a milk supply production, and then we had all the cascade of events. But again, it's part of the process. You know, it's like you don't know what you're going to meet at any point along the journey, and it's always how are you going to meet it, right? That's you know, it's like life can be many things. How are you going to walk through it? How are you going to respond? That's what we have control over. I didn't realize that then. A few more decades of living life and you figure some things out.
No, I think that you're absolutely right in that, you know, it's, you know, how we respond to difficult circumstances and, mm-hmm. and challenges that we're faced with, yeah. that really, you know, show our character or build
yes,
our character.
And build our character, absolutely. Yeah.
So then, what was the age gap between the first and the second?
2.5 years.
So can you talk about the conception? Was it planned or?
Yeah, well, let's see. Yes, both of those two, I think all three, well, yeah, we weren't actually actively trying, but we weren't, you know, we were going to have a bigger family, and so we weren't also actively trying to avoid it, so we're kind of like, you know, allowing it to be what it, you know, when it was going to be. And so I don't remember, like, with our first, I was like, okay, we're going to start now. And the first month I didn't get pregnant, and I just fell apart, and my husband was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a long process, right? And then the second month I got pregnant. So it wasn't hard. And I think Ella was like that too. I mean, we just decided not to be, you know, not to be using anything. And, you know, a month later I'm pregnant kind of thing, so. I don't remember exactly if it wasn't planned like the first. It was just kind of like it's, you know, around the time that we might start thinking about another one.
And you were still working as a midwife or in labor and delivery nurse?
Yes. And at that, I had actually stepped out. It was during my pregnancy with Ellery that I stopped working in labor and delivery. At that point, I was working like every other weekend, and it had become so few days that I remember thinking, you know, if I have to, like, go to the ER for a crash C-section, I'm like, I haven't been in the ER in, like, 8 months. You know, like, I'm losing my skills because I'm not, you know, working very much. And plus, I didn't go to the ER a lot with the people that I was with. It just wasn't, you know, they were like, okay, let's put Peg on this so she can get in the ER. And then I'd get in the room and everything would switch and they'd give birth vaginally. So that, and that we were having another baby, and we decided that I was just going to stop. And I did something called legal nurse consulting. So I was doing that at home when I was pregnant with Ellery. So I'd stopped somewhere in that range from working, at least in the hospital, and was doing the just paperwork kind of stuff at home. And and her pregnancy was very different, where I carried her really low, I remember. And every once in a while, the lowness of her in my pelvis, I would hit some sort of nerve in my lower pelvis and it would literally just drop me to the floor. Like, I'd have to, like, squat down and open my leg because it was just this, like, lightning, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was intense. And I remember, like, I'd be in the grocery store and it would happen and people would come running. I'm like, no, I'm really okay. I just needed to get down for a minute and open whatever it was because she was so low. But the pregnancy was good. But what I had a lot of fears about was the birth. I was like, gosh, if it's like the first one, I'm like, I don't know if I want to do it again. You know, it's just like, oh, that just had, like, probably a version of PTSD. It was so intense. And so I actually, in that pregnancy, I developed a backup plan. So I had a midwife that would work at a hospital, and I knew that if I got to a certain point, like I was going in for a Demerol, an epidural, something, right? Like, I didn't want to do that again. And I remember actually when I went back to work after I'd given birth to my first, I was always the nurse that was like, you know, they'd come in saying, I want a natural birth. I'm like, I will help you. I will do whatever you know, it's like, I can help you get through this. And I was, I had been given a gift. Like, I was very good at being with women in birth and helping them get through it. But after I had my first birth, as soon as they were like, I think I want an epidural, I'd be like, okay, let me call the anesthesiologist. We're right on that. So it shifted how I walked in birth for a little while until I... You know, it's like you learn and then you look at yourself like, okay, how much of this is me and what do they really want? And so then I'd shift it and I'd say, how about let's just get you through 3 or 4 more contractions, you know, just take it a little bit more in time, just be in time and see how they respond. And if they're really still wanting it, I wouldn't be so, like, before the birth, I'd be like, no, you can really do it, and talk them back into it. I tried to meet them where they were more, you know, and honor what they really wanted to do. So back to Ellery. So I was afraid. I was really afraid of birth the second time. And set up. So I was seeing a home birth for all my visits, but I made appointments with a hospital midwife so that I knew I had a backup so I could go in if I needed to and wanted to. And the pregnancy was, again, uneventful other than that little shock in my pelvis in the last trimester. I felt good and I had very healthy pregnancies. And
you knew the sex?
No, with Aaron we didn't know the sex, and with Ellery we did find out I had a friend that worked in ultrasound, and we went just to, you know, to go see real quick. I didn't want to do early ultrasounds, but I was like, yeah, let's so it's just my husband and I that knew that it was going to be a girl. And it was like in the 39th week of pregnancy, 38th week. It was right before she was born. And I think that's right. I lose track of things, but I don't think we told anybody. I think we kept it to ourselves.
You probably got a really good view of, like, what she was going to look like.
We did. Yeah, it was sweet. Though we didn't have the 3D back then, but it was, it was fun to see her. So her birth... I remember it started in the evening and it was so easy. It was just this, like, super light contractions. Actually, I woke up with it. That's what it was. I had gone to bed and I woke up with this, like, oh, I'm having a contraction. And I thought, Then I lay there for another little bit, and it'd be a couple easy ones, and I'd be like, and then it'd be a little bit harder. And I thought, well, it's too hard for me to sleep. So I told Phil, I said, you know, honey, I might be in early labor. Keep sleeping. You know, it was like 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, one of us should get, I don't need you right now. Go back to sleep. So I remember I cleaned the house, like, spotless. Everything was like, so I cleaned from like 10 to like 4:30 or 5. And it was the same thing. I'd like have a good contraction, and then I have like three easy ones. It was so easy. And I thought, boy, it's going to take a while at this rate, right? And so I just kept cleaning the house. I'm like, why not? I can't sleep. Might as well do something. So the house got totally clean, and they finally got to the point where I was having, every once in a while I have a really strong one. I thought, well, maybe we should let the midwife know. So I woke up my husband, and I said, you know, honey, every once in a while, it's really intense. I think we should call the midwife and just give her a heads up, and I think I'd like to have you with me. And then I'd have a couple not-so-hard ones. I'm like, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't call the midwife. And then it would hit me again and be hard again. And it was only literally in the last, like, I had like three really hard ones in a row that kind of were like transition, but they just proceeded by light ones. So I was like, okay, they were really intense, but now it's okay again. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't, you know, it's like, you don't know. So I'm like, maybe call her to come, and maybe I'll get in the tub. So we had a birth tub, a really big, nice one for this birth. It was foam. It was like 4 feet deep. So it was just the right height that you could totally sit and submerge up to your neck and stand on your hand, you know, be on your hands and knees. It was like the perfect height, and it was huge. It's like I could totally stretch out completely. It was so nice. My husband could have gotten in, but he didn't with that one. He held me from the edge. But I just felt like I was in this womb of water. And it was only at the end because I didn't want to get in because I was afraid I'd stop it. You know, it had been so off and on. I was like, I don't want to stop everything, you know? So I'm like, I better wait. And then I had those three hard, like, I could call the midwife, and I think I'm going to get in the tub now. And I got in, and again, that huge relaxation, and then here it came. Super hard and nonstop. The midwife came in, I don't know, not very long before. I mean, probably right when I started pushing. And she only lived like 15 minutes away, 15, 20 minutes away. And I just remember telling her, I'm so afraid of this being like the first one with the rectal spasms. I'm so afraid. And I remember this, she just had such beautiful counsel. She said, Peg, this is a different birth. And she's like, was her birth up to this point different? I'm like, yeah. She said, has your water broke? No. I know, she was just pointing out the obvious, like this is a completely different birth, and that you can create space for it to be something. It doesn't have to be what it was, right? And to let that go, that trauma from the first. And her bag of waters ended up breaking as her head was coming out. It was pretty intact to the very end. And I remember she came out, and we brought her up on my belly, and she had a very short cord, which I didn't know. I just remember trying to bring her up a little harder, higher, and get her head above the water, and it would just be like, ow, something's really hurting, you know, because it was the cord kind of pulling up on me. And then we finally got to this middle space where my husband had to hold her little chin up so her head was above the water, but she was actually born under the water. She was born under the water, and they brought her up, you know, right away. And so being in the water, where before I just was in water in labor the first time, and then the second birth, obviously, and the water not having broken. I mean, it was like night and day, the birth. And the second baby had already, and she was smaller. She was 7'14", so not a lot smaller, but apparently enough to make, you know, a difference. And by far, it was my easiest birth. And I remember so much as soon as she came out, I looked at one of the midwives and I said, now I could do that again. You know, it was like, it wasn't the first experience like I thought. And it was just like, and I feel like that was one of her gifts, you know? I feel like, you know, the spasms that I was having earlier in pregnancy was almost like a preamble. You know, I did some of the work there for labor, you know, in a way. And that, yeah, and who she is as a being, you know, it's like she's going to make it, she's not going to make it hard. You know, it's like she, as a soul, she would try to make it as easy as possible, and she did. You know, that in that, again, that co-creative process, we're in it together. And she healed my trauma from not being able to nurse. That girl, all she wanted to do was nurse all the time. And I remember trying to wean her so many times. She was like 2 and a half when I finally weaned her. And at the time, I mean, it was nice because it did heal a lot of the wounds that I had created with the first or had with not being able to nurse and just having it be so successful. And she was very allergic. As soon as my milk came in, she started bleeding. And we didn't know if it was vaginally or rectally, because you know how they can have the hormonal shift. It was definitely rectal. And found out that she was severely allergic to any dairy. So I had to completely cut all dairy out. And if I like went to a restaurant and didn't know it and they put a little bit of butter in, she would like sleep for 2 days and bleed. So she was very, very sensitive. So changed my diet for that. But again, like the nursing was just, it just was such a blessing, you know, to have that experience after the first and just to get to enjoy it so much. And then she enjoyed it so much. And then with her having these sensitivities, it was probably good that she had that. And she was resisting being weaned because she knew the state of her gut, I believe. It's like she knew that it wasn't the right time and that she needed more of... Now, anthroposophically, we looked at things a little different, that about a year is a good time to wean, because as soon as the baby stands upright into their ego, into their eye, that it's time to wean away from the mom's, you know, eye. It's time for them to stand. And when they're constantly drinking the mom's milk, it's full of the mom's ego and the mom's eye. But you can also look at it as risk-benefit and balance, that she had a significant gut issue and that it had a healing piece to it. But I remember I went away on a trip and I thought, okay, I'm going to be gone for the weekend. When I come back, surely. And she was old enough at 2 and a half. I mean, she was bargaining. She'd be like, Mom, Mommy, my milk. And I'd be like, no, honey. You know, it's like, we're going to have this kind of milk. And she's like, please. I'm like, no, honey. She's like, just one side. I remember her like really bargaining me. I'm like, honey, no. And she's like, just teeny, teeny, tiny bit, one side. You know, it's like, oh, that girl. She's a very great negotiator, let me tell you. So I think, it was about 2 and a half. And she probably, looking back, her gut really started to, at 3, that some big shifts were made. Like she actually developed a few other food allergies in that time that we had to pull away. I remember strawberries and a few other things that came up after weaning that might have. But we just, you know, it's like she's good and it's her process too, right?
Does she still have dairy issues now?
Yeah, kind of. Not nearly as much. But yeah, she has a sensitivity there. But yeah, it's something that she can... She doesn't drink milk. That might not be very comfortable, but like high fat, butter, and that kind of stuff is okay. But when we did test her at some point, she had allergies to the casein, the whey, like 3 properties of milk. But her gut, you know, she's an adult now, so it's probably just a mild, yeah, it's not a true allergy kind of thing anymore.
That was a really beautiful story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really great. Okay. Yeah, it was just like such a nice pairing, you know, and the changes that happened from the first birth to the mm-hmm. second.
Yeah, and the healing and mm-hmm. the new awarenesses and yeah, and that we walk together as souls, you know, how to help each other. Yeah.
That's a good, you should maybe keep that for the end. Mm-hmm. So then was the third one different?
Yes, all 3 of them were different. So I want to tell you that one of the things that we did that I'd like to pull in, because it was just such a beautiful practice, one was we did belly casts. And with Ellery, I got invited to a blessing way, which was organized by Pam England, the midwife, and very ceremonial. We went out at dawn. And the morning, it was a very cool morning in the fall. It was cold. It was frosty. And we went out in succession, I guess. That's not the right word. But they had drums. There was drumming. And there are women that were going to be with us, birthing women. And then there are the midwives. And there were other people, just, you know, assistants. All women, though. And we went out and made a big circle in this field, and You know, she asks, are you willing to, you know, go into the unknown? And so those of us that were pregnant and being blessed had no idea what was going to happen. Everybody else did. And there were prayers and ceremony and song. And then they basically created these stations. So each of the women in the circle were a station that you were to go to. And so it just took just one at a time. You went to the station and something that you didn't know was coming would happen. So what it ended up being at the end was that we were completely naked with painting, like, on ourselves. That was a big thing. Like, I remember, like, this, you know, like, not knowing what was coming and just having to take what it was. And then being prepared, like, kind of as a warrior, you know, to go into that space and be given power. And then at the end, I remember she got up on this ladder and took this huge vessel, big, round, you know, she could barely get up the stairs, it was so heavy, up the ladder, it was so vessel, and she took it to the top and ceremoniously held it out and dropped it, and it just smashed. Again, like, you know, just as a symbol of that transformative peace that comes with birth, and that you're not the same as where you were before. And before I talk about another thing, is that I do remember after my first birth and after I did it, that was my first thought, like, first the pain was over, and the second was, I did it. And that moment of empowerment, I'd never experienced anything like that before. You know, like, wow. I mean, I'm the only one who knows what that was like to me. And so it was my power, it was my knowing, it was my experience of, wow, if I can do that, what can I not do? Right? What can I not do? So one of the other things that the midwives, my first birth, Pam, she said, think of a little song, Peg, that you can sing to the baby now, and that when she's born, you can use it to soothe her, and which was good because she was so colicky with all the gut issues. She just had such a hard little baby childhood, her young 0 to 6 months, until she started eating food. We gave her food, she was so much happier, like, get off the milk, and she was like, oh, thank goodness. So we sang for her. I picked a song out of a book. I used to be a early childhood educator, and it went like this. It was, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, your mommy I'll be. And then the second birth, with the pregnancy, she told me that at the very end. So I just kind of quickly, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this one. This sounds pretty good. So with Ellery, I started thinking about it. I was like, okay, I'd like to think about this song. And a song came. It actually came off of one of the, I don't know where it came. I just turned on one of the kids. I don't know where it was, but it came to me. And it went like this. The moment I saw you, I wanted to hold you and keep you warm on a cold gray morn. The moment I held you, I wanted to kiss you. Oh, it brings it up for me. And welcome you here on the day you were born. So she ended up being born on a cold winter's morn, like, as the sun was coming up at like 7:45, and it was so cold. And the song came way before even, you know, it's like it was just so reflective of exactly the process that took place. And then my sons, that one just came too. Again, you know, it's like the older I get, the more I realize that if you just pay attention, everything comes. That you don't have to force it, you don't have to, everything that you, yeah, it will be there, and it will show up for you, you know, it's like the universe, you know, that whole thing in the universe provides, it does, you just have to be observant, and watch for it to show up, because it'll always be given. So this was another song, same thing, and it was, wherever you rest your head tonight, We are all one family, let's hold tight and fill the world with dreams of harmony tonight. And he was born in the evening. And it was a song that, you know, because at that point, it's like I didn't think we'd have another, you know, it's like our family was complete, in a microcosm and also in a, you know, bigger macrocosm. So, to his birth, you know, or pregnancy, I'll start with that. So I knew pretty early he was a boy because I smelled like a boy. Like when I go to the bathroom and I'd wipe, I'm like, I smell like musty, you know, like just like I was wiping my husband's perineum instead of mine. And so I was like, this is very different than the girls. And the girls' pregnancy were very different. Erin, I carried very high. Ellery, I carried very low. And so I actually thought for a while that Ellery would be a boy just because of the difference in pregnancy. And then when I had, with the third pregnancy, and I had that smell, I'm like, this is definitely a boy, honey. It's like, there is no question about it. And I remember when I... So with him, like, I was really thinking I wanted another baby. And my husband, like, yeah, maybe. But we, again, weren't, like, actively trying to prevent it. And I remember taking the pregnancy test, and he wasn't there. And I decided I want to try to figure out how to tell him. And so he used to come home every day for lunch. And I made a salad with an egg, a hard-boiled egg, and we had some sprouts. And so I put the sprout, like one sprout, right on the top of the egg to represent the sperm and the egg to represent the egg, and then made like very phallic, like a carrot and or cucumber with two other round things to make it look like a penis, you know, ejaculating. And so he sits down to lunch and he's like, one sprout on the egg, you know, he's like totally clueless as to this landscape that I've laid out in front of him. I'm like, so, honey, do you notice anything about your lunch? He's like, yeah, there was a sprout on the egg. I'm like, anything else about... He's like, well, it looks a little phallic. And I just pretty much had to lead him all along. And finally, I was like, does this mean something? I'm like, yes, it does. And I don't remember exact words, but he did clue in eventually. And it was another symbol. You know, it's like I'd put in the boy parts right there on the plate. That was actually probably even before I had the smell. You know, that was like, you know, maybe like 3 weeks pregnant or something. Anyway, interesting how symbols come up like that. You know, how you don't even think about it, you know, unconscious things. And let's see. So I was at that point just a stay-at-home mom. And our oldest daughter was getting ready to start school. So remember, I was investigating in schools and I wanted to do Waldorf education. The only one was in Santa Fe. And so it was a lot on my mind with that pregnancy on what, where she was going to go to school or how it was going to look, if it's going to homeschool. And because Philip was going to be born about 6 weeks before her school year would start. And with the third pregnancy, you know, it's like you're busy with the other two. And you really don't give much thought to it. Like, I remember the first pregnancy, you know, that saying, like, it'll be the longest short time you've ever had. You know, this like, it is a short time, but it just seems like it goes forever waiting for that baby. And the third pregnancy, it's just like, wow, I'm like 7 months. How'd that wait? I was just 2 months, you know, just a little while ago. So it went really fast. I remember that. And I remember having a dream that I was going to give birth all by myself and that it was going to be really quick, and so I had read to the girls, and we were laying down to take a nap, and my eldest daughter, she said, I hated it when you were pregnant, and we had to lay down and take a nap, because I didn't want to take a nap, and she was like 5 at the time, which, right, but she still actually did a lot better with a nap, but she, you know, in hindsight, she was like, I hated to lay down, I was like, I needed a nap. I needed to lay down, so you're going to lay down. And she don't fall asleep anyway. But I had laid down for a nap and had fallen asleep and woke up, and my water had broken. So I was like, oh, looks like it's going to be sometime around today. And I dreamed it was on the 4th of July, and it was on the 3rd. It was the 3rd when my water broke, and in the afternoon. So I thought, oh, we are going to have a 4th of July baby. And so, I called my husband, like, hey, honey, my water broke, and, so we're going to have a baby here soon. And I called the midwife and told her just what was going on, that I wasn't in labor at all, and that I'd let her know. And so we were getting ready for a big party the next day at the house for 4th of July, and my husband was like, well, what do you want to do? You know, it's like, do you want to have the kids here? Do you want to, you and me, go out to dinner? Do you want to cook? I'm like, well, I have to cook this potato salad for the big party tomorrow. So I was like, I think I'm going to put the potatoes on. And the plan, I remember it changed like 6 times. Like, maybe we'll go out. No, let's eat here. And we'll go to the neighbors and eat. And we finally settled that we were going to go out to eat. And so he's like, well, let me go bring the kids to grandma's, which is like literally a mile away. And I'm like, okay, I'll go bring the potatoes to the neighbor and have her finish those up for us. So I think I brought the potatoes to the neighbor and he brought kids. I went up to change, I think. One of us brought the potatoes to the neighbor, said, hey, will you finish boiling these and we'll get them later to finish the salad. I'm going to take the kids and, you know, Peg's water broke and we're just going to go to dinner or something. So he took the potatoes, he brought the kids, they got in the car, and he got about halfway to grandma's. And I got about upstairs, and labor hit so hard I couldn't get from the bed to the telephone table, which was over across the room from here to that wall, you know, 20 feet. And he, at that moment, had the thought, like, oh my gosh, I just left Peg alone, and she's had this dream that she's giving birth all by herself. And so, and I'm like, I need to call Phil and tell him so he can call the midwife. I could not move. There was no break in between. I was just like one contraction after the other after the other. And I was just like, so I started talking to the baby. You know, I was like, okay, I know you're in a hurry, but you need to breathe and I need to breathe. And I was worried about anoxia. You know, it's like it was just this one constant contraction. You know, it's like I know too much. You know, like, am I abrupting? That was my thought. Like, oh my gosh, this is what happens when somebody abrupts. You know, one, it's just to get the baby out as fast as possible because the placenta is ripping off, and sometimes you know too much, you know. I'm just like, but I couldn't move. I literally could not move from the side of the bed. And Phil realizes what he's done. He's trying to call now. I can't get to the phone. He drops the kids off, turns around, comes ripping back in the door. I'm like, honey, he's like, I already called her. You know, like, he already knew where I screamed immediately, like, call the midwife. And he came up and helped me. I think I was half dressed at that point. And he had already started to, I think, fill the birth tub. It's hard to, something like that, because I know that I got in the tub for a short period of time. We called my friend who was going to take pictures. We called the midwife, and she got there as his head was coming out. And I remember reaching down to feel him, and I felt what I thought was the cord. You know, I was a little traumatized by the rapidity of it, how fast it was. But I told you I had that conversation with the baby. I said, honey, I was just talking to the baby, like, baby, you got to slow things down here. Neither of us can handle this. It's like, we need a break. And he did. I mean, it was after my husband came, but things did slow down a little bit, and I got a little break in between contractions. And so he helped me get downstairs and into the birth tub. But yeah, the photographer friend of mine who had just had a baby a couple months ago was like getting the towels ready, because I was already, you know, I just pretty much went into pushing, and, you know, that stage of it just was fast. So I think about an hour for beginning to end. And midwife came in. I'm like, I think it's a cord. And she went and touched, like, no, it's his ear. I'm like, oh, thank God. And yeah, a couple pushes, and I don't remember. Yeah, it was intense. I remember it almost like trying to hold him in, you know, just to slow it down. Like, oh my gosh, it's so fast.
Did you tear?
Not too much. I tore a little bit with Aaron, and they didn't stitch it. And if there was anything with the other two, it was very minor. It wasn't anything to, yeah, nothing hardly. So, no, again, that the body is wise, you know, when you can feel and be, you know. And, I mean, sometimes you do just because it's, you know, it's supposed to happen. You know, it is what it is. No, there's no right or wrong. Yeah, and he, I remember when he came out, and he looked just like my brother to me. And Phil was like, he looks just like me. So it was interesting. Phil looked at him. He's like, he looks just like me. And we had agreed not to ever name our children our name. And right there, I was like, it just came. He's like, he looks just like me. Can we name him Philip? I was like, well, I guess. Sure. I thought we weren't going to do that, but yeah, I mean, that's what you really want to do. And, you know, it was kind of sweet. So we end up with a very long name. Philip Zane, which is stands for John, which is his family name, and Patrick, which is my brother's name, Freisinger. So, whew, that is it. And it was cute because if you put the two initials in the middle, it's Philip Zippy Freisinger, which is, you know, kind of reflective of his birth. It was really fast. And he was the most easygoing. So in anthroposophy, we look at human beings. One of the ways we look at them is in what's called a threefold way. And there are those people that we call nerve sense that are very, they take in the world, they're very smart, they walk really early as babies, they're very alert, but also, you know, there can be issues with anxiety and just because they, it's so, they just see everything. They're not dreamy, they're here. And that's very much my first child. She's a nerve sense baby. And then Ellery, my second girl, she'd be more what we call metabolic type, where those people, babies are much more dreamy. They spend a lot of time in imagination. She had tons of imaginary friends. And they're more of a creative force in the world. So the nerve sense types are the thinkers, and the metabolic types are the doers. They have a will force, and they're very creative and very artistic and can walk in the world. So that was Ellery. And then the third one is the middle realm, the rhythmical aspect of the being, which is reflects the heart and the lung, and it helps keep balance between the thinking and the will, the doing and the feeling and the will. So, sorry, not the feeling, it is a feeling realm. And my son is very much that. He's very, I remember him just, I'd hold him and he'd just kind of hang there. You know, he was just so like, you could put him down anywhere, he'd lay around. I mean, typical third baby, right? They're just, they're so easygoing, and he'd take a nap anywhere. He never had a schedule like my first had to have a schedule or she'd freak out. Again, that birth order thing. There's something to these characteristics that come with birth order. But yeah, he nursed right to a year. It was always easy. Everything was just so easy with him. He just, yeah, it just hung out, literally. You know, it was just like, all right, this place not so bad. You know? Yeah. So, yeah, it was, yeah, really good. Intense, but good. Yeah.
We normally ask, because we don't like to categorize these stories as like C-section, home birth, like, mm-hmm. you know, because there's so much more nuance than just those terrible categories. And so we have, right, we have four categories now, or themes, we're calling them, and then more emerge as we go on.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we have faith, connection, what am we talking about? Is this
sensory?
That's what it is, sensory.
Trauma.
And trauma doesn't mean just a terrible birth or anything. It could mean a lot of things. But and so we'll ask our storyteller sometimes, can you think of a word or a phrasing of words that kind of encapsulates or describes your birth experience, even though you have three very different births?
Yeah. So using one of those four words?
No. So it could be anything. But that's partly why I ask, because with you, you know, transformation seems like such the term.
Yes.
But maybe there's something else that, or if you want to elaborate.
Yeah, I would say transformative growth, maybe, or even transformative healing or sequential healing even might be appropriate. Yeah, there's so many ways that, see, I'm one of those, you know, people ask me, what's your favorite? I don't have a favorite anything. You know, it's like I can appreciate aspects of so many different things, and that's kind of when you're asked to call upon one phrase. I'm like, well, there's like 1,000 phrases that I could put to this experience on so many levels.
Well, yours actually fits in all of those categories. That's the funny thing, because you're so connected, you know, with, you know, with with your body and, you know, with the universe, as cheese ball as that might sound, but, you know, seeing those signs and mm-hmm. accepting the symbols and all of and that, and kind of just going with the flow and all of that. And then, of course, the traumatic aspects and the yeah. sensory aspects, because, you know, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And that, I mean, if I had to bring it to one word, it would be initiation. You know, it really would be. So the transformative power of the transformation of self through the initiation of birth. Maybe something like that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, actually, do you have any other questions?
Okay.
Do you want to add anything else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you. Sure you know.